go for the same actually, and change some of those.
Yeah.
And I'm also changing the code to move it to the model.
Okay. So, any luck with that so far?
No, just started to.
But you have some vision as to how that can be done? You see it can be done?
Yes, I will remove the main core portion of our code to the module and then one by one take the functions from the main kernel that we used. So I will just take out one file that implements the helper functions, because I cannot take out the system calls. Mm-hmm. They have to register initially.
Right.
So I'll take the helper functions and others, and the system calls will just call those functions from the module.
Okay.
So that's what I'm trying to take out the functions from the system calls. Started working on that. So I'll remove a small amount at first to see if it works.
Okay. Okay. So then your next steps are to work on the... So you fixed all the bugs.
Fix the bugs and create and delete.
Okay. Are there other bugs remaining? Or?
I don't know. These two works fine. So still to check the MMap.
Mm-hmm.
And the page allocation also works fine. Persistent page allocation for 1024 regions per process. I'm looking into the MMap now to see if it's okay. Running some test on the machine.
Okay. So what are your sort of, I'd like to have a sense for what your goal is.
The goal is to run all the tests in the military and without any
error. When you say all the tests, what does that mean?
All the system calls. Like step, create some regions, then open regions, and allocate pages for all the, a lot of pages for the regions, then mmap those pages, and then mmap and msync.
Okay.
Compare them, if all the system calls, if all of our system call works perfectly, then write the comparison with the PMFS.
Comparison with PMFS.
The same.
So you're talking about a micro benchmark based evaluation?
Yes.
So do you see equivalent PMFS micro benchmarks that you could compare against?
For region, create and open, it's actually a file open.
Okay, so you've thought about each of these system calls and you found equivalent?
More or less equivalent, actually. So we allocate a page to a region, but we can't allocate a page to a file. We increase the size of the file.
Hmm.
So what we can do is increase the size of the file by 4 KB comparing to allocating a persistent page to a region. And mmap is similar, but like for PMFS, we can mmap a bigger portion of memory. So for region system, we have to iteratively mmap. Like if you have 1 megabyte page mapped to memory for PMFS, then we have to iteratively map 256 4K pages for the region system. Mm-hmm. So they're more or less similar, but
like when you say you have to, right? Nothing is you have to, because you can always change.
Yeah.
So I mean, I just want us to not be limited by our current implementation, and if we need to, we have a good reason for us to expand our design. We should be open to that.
The size of the page is a concern actually. Mm-hmm. If you want to expand the design, and because for mmap we want to have big size page.
Right, so I'm not saying that we should do it now. I think you're still at a preliminary stage, and it's important for you to perfect whatever you already have. But at the same time, I want us to have a more open view of the design.
I looked into the PMFS block allocation.
Hmm.
sorry, page, yeah, block allocation. This almost same as our my implementation. So what they do is they decide the page size at the block size at the beginning.
So the beginning of the system start?
Yeah, mounting, when they mount. So they have this default page size of 4K. And if they want to use a big page, they use the 2 megabyte page.
When you say they want to, what would they decide that based on?
Depending on the workload. If there is some evaluation in the paper that they wanted to use big page size.
So it's a configurable parameter,
yes,
in their design.
Yes.
So you can configure it at mount time?
Yes.
Shouldn't this be at region and at the file system creation time?
That's when the file system gets created, right?
Mount is
not when you create the file system. Mount is when you make the file system accessible. Creating the file system is different than mounting the file system. You know that, right?
Well, but see, they don't have to do much, right? So usually when you create a file system, like, you have to just write some structure to the name, yeah, but they don't have to.
Why don't they have to do that?
There's nothing to write to, right?
Nothing to write to. What does that mean? Meaning that PMFS doesn't have any metadata at all?
Oh, I see what you mean.
They create the super block structure.
There has to be some metadata, otherwise you can't store it. You won't know what you put where. So then, does it happen at the time of creation of the file system, or at the? I don't think it can happen at the time of mount,
yes,
because if you create a file system with 4K page size, you cannot magically map those into much larger granularities.
So when they mount, they put the provide the starting address and the size. That's the only point they can start creating. Or
don't know what you mean by starting address of what and size of what?
Starting address of the file, PMFS.
There's a portion of your physical address that you have
physical
to
address that
PMFS
is using.
So when you
it's like a memory partition. It's like a memory partition where you specify offset and size,
right,
which contains the PMFS instance.
Yes.
These are physical addresses that I use. Basically telling the kernel, don't use this, I'm going to handle that.
Okay, so at that, when you specify that, and you do that at boot time or?
Mount time.
At mount time?
There's two parameters. The boot time, they instruct the kernel not to use that.
Okay.
But there's nothing related to PM, the module.
Mm-hmm.
And at the mount time, they give the address,
mm-hmm,
and the size of the file system.
Okay.
Physical address.
Fine.
Then when they mount, they actually take these two parameters and fill the super box if it doesn't exist, or reconstruct the...
You mean create the super block if,
yes,
it doesn't exist.
Yes.
So mount could also, it can also be interpreted as create. Is that what you're saying? It's like, so for instance, if you look at a conventional Linux file system, makefs,
yes,
and mount are two different tools.
They don't have a makefs.
They don't have a makefs. So they are basically overloading mount to also create the file system if necessary.
Yes.
Okay. So at that time,
they provide the address and they configure the size of the pages.
Yeah, we know that. But oh, the size of the pages too.
Yes. If they want to provide any other size other than 4K.
Oh, so the default size is 4K. But you could create. So it's not mount. It's just that they call it mount, which is not the conventional term to be used. Because making a file system is different than mounting a file system. Mounting a file system just exposes an existing file system instance to be readable and writable. Potentially readable. Sometimes you can mount as read-only and then you don't get to write to it. Okay, so the terminology is a little different, which is confusing. But what you're saying is that you can specify the page size at
creation time.
File system creation time. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, it would be surprising if they support dynamically changing the page size for an existing file system. That would be changing the block size for an existing file system in Linux. I mean, say you have an EXT3 or EXT4 file system which was using 4K block size, and now suddenly you say, okay, I'm going to use 2 megabyte block size. It's not magic. It's not going to happen.
Right. Right?
Because all your 2 megabyte blocks are going to be fragmented across the disk in 4K chunks. So it's, and I'm assuming it would be the same issue with DMFS. Because
it is confusing because they do the creation of at the time of mounting device.
Right. So they have a support for configuring the page size at file system creation time. So the question is, can we do something similar for the region system? It can be done. And then the issue is that every file needs to be allocated at least 2 megabytes.
Yes.
Right, if you go with the larger page.
Yes.
Is it that
if it's provided with, if it allocates a page, it would be 2 megabytes.
At least 2 megabytes. Yeah. Okay, so the same limitation occurs with PMFS as well, I'm assuming. And I was wondering if there's like a dynamically a page size that being configured per file and per region.
There would be some other changes, like, so if we allocate the blocks or pages in 2 megabyte size, then the size of the metadata blocks will also change.
Yeah.
So number of R nodes per block will change according to the interest.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have now fixed the pages to 4K.
Yeah.
And divide them into R nodes.
Yes.
So the numbers will be changed.
I think what you should do as part of your implementation, right, so that you don't need to go change constants all over the place, is to set up hash defines or macros of some kind where you can derive these sort of constants based on the page size. And then page size is a configurable parameter and everything is derived from that.
It's mostly constant.
Yeah, so yeah, I suspected that, which is why, I mean, the earlier you fix this, the easier it will be for you eventually to support something like that. Okay, so good. And so after the micro benchmarks, okay, let's not jump ahead. So your goal, as I see, is to get micro benchmark results, define micro benchmarks for the region system, and equivalent micro benchmarks for PMFS, which maybe do not do the same thing because the same operations are not available, but do equivalent operations.
So I've designed them, defined them.
You already defined them.
Yes. So I'll send you the list of...
Perfect.
And I'm going to run them next. So all the micro, all the tests, and then create similar tests for the PMFS. First I'll run the region system portion and then...
Okay.
You know, integrating with the PM library, to be very straightforward, because all we have to change is just a single file. There's an indirection layer in which you say, this is how you allocate pages, this is how you open and close, whatever the thing is, either a file or a region. So you just have to basically get the, so that's sort of the point of the functions, and everything else will remain the same.
So if you
have an equivalent of open and close, I think I have maybe the direct allocations or map on the two. So the basic functions that a file system exports, you can just plug that in and everything else remains the same.
Well, the big difference would be that this region system provides an atomic sync operation. So a significant portion of the PMLib can be simplified.
What granularity is it, I think?
Region granularity.
Oh, so the whole region?
I don't know if you have the implementation all sorted out for PM-Sync.
Yeah, we had the integration from the R-node level. Now we have this in the lowest level.
Mm.
So the dual pointers are only at the lowest level. Yes.
Is it the region or whatever is mapped? So the whole region is mapped, right? You know,
the
map.
For the pages that are mapped for that region. So.
I see. Oh, but like he's saying, life is really simple, right?
That was the whole point of creating this region.
Yeah.
So, right? So that the library has to do very little work.
Library doesn't have to, it's become basically
very lightweight.
It's just memory allocator.
And it's a slab allocator, but with some discovery mechanisms and data moving capabilities, and but none of the persistence mechanisms.
Even the slab would change because now we keep track of multiple versions in the slab. We don't need that anymore.
True. So it's going to be simplified even a lot more than we think. So, although you can integrate with the region system as is, but you're going to be doing double work in that version. Unless you optimize it explicitly for the sync, atomic sync capabilities of the region system, you won't derive, I guess, the full benefit of it. And what is worse is that every time you issue a sync, there'll be double work done at these two layers.
I guess we can keep a branch just for that.
Hmm. And that version, I suspect, will be rather straightforward for you to create because it's basically removing a whole bunch of messy detail and keeping it and making it really streamlined.
Right.
So at some point when the region system is stable enough, then, you know, it might be worth talking about how the implementation can be modified to work with the region system.
Question. I'm assuming that the way you keep track of versions is also by doing copy and write of pages, right?
Yes.
So, having 2 megabyte pages might be an overkill. So, it's probably good to take a look at the logging infrastructure that people possess. Because maybe it's better as a little login as opposed to copyright the entire page.
Yeah, they said this. They wrote it in the paper. For the big pages, actually.
Well, the interface for PMFS is different. It's a write interface as opposed to a mmap interface. That's the only reason they can easily log updates. Because every time you want to update some piece of your file in persistent memory, you issue a write system call.
But they also support memory maps.
They support mmap, but I don't think they can log those updates.
Because it is an unsupervised write.
It's an unsupervised write, exactly. So you had to extract the write. And so that becomes a challenge. I don't know what they do when they
MMAP. Say that the application should be careful to sync their changes to.
Mm-hmm. And in the right order, because the sync is not atomic either. So it's really challenging for an application to use mmap.
We don't have atomic mSync, but they say application should be careful to use mmap.
This is what we should, you know, your paper needs to be, is about the missing capabilities of what already exists. Right? And that would probably be the biggest selling point of the work.
The paper you send us would sync stings.
Yeah.
They actually review why MSync is bad.
Okay. I haven't read the paper.
I just read the
good. Tell us what you learned.
Abstract in the first page, actually. So what they want to justify is that doing MSync for persistent will be be very costly.
How?
So after I didn't deep into it, but they said after a certain point of because the speed of NVM, latency of NVM and DRAM is almost for writes almost closer. After a certain point, it's not beneficial to use NVRAM. Non-volatile memory.
Quite understand what you're
saying. I have to actually go through that again too.
Why don't you do that and next week we'll discuss this paper. And I'll also have a chance to look at the paper again.
Write down.
Yeah. I think it would be good to talk about it. And Leo, if you also have a copy of that paper, right?
One stuff, right?
No, the one that I sent. It's called Sync Stinks. It's under review at FAST. So let's read it and discuss it next time. So we get good. I don't know what it is that you're trying to say, but what is the conclusion you're drawing? It's not entirely clear as to how it applies to what we are doing with the region system. It would be good to think about all those questions. Okay. All right. So your target is getting a graph with micro benchmarks performance of region system and performance of PFS. That one, let's call it a bar chart. That's your goal. Right? Everything you're doing is focusing on that goal that you'll produce in the paper. Yeah? Okay.
Good.
Nice. I like that. I like the fact that whatever you're doing is going into a paper. That's important. So, Daniel, you want to tell us what you did?
Sure. I basically created the documentation using the Doxygen.
Okay. So, what was the goal of doing this, right? What was the goal? Why did you start doing this?
Because it gives us the graphs that you wanted.
Oh.
You have to click on whatever. Click on the container.
Main page.
The go back to data structures and just container.
Yeah.
And that'll. And for every data structure and also the files,
okay,
it shows you dependencies and what it calls.
Okay. Remind me why we are doing all of this. Leo, remind me why we are doing this.
For the what I remember is that the goal was to have a description of the test.
Yeah.
So if we go to the test files,
okay,
beside data structures, it's files.
Oh, files. Okay.
And just click on any of the tests.
How about this? Yeah. And I don't see it going into the PMLib anywhere. Is it?
No, this is file dependency. It's like
graph. Oh. It's a file dependency graph. Not a function dependency graph.
No. What includes what?
I should be able to. I could look into the documentation. I thought I had it so that it just creates every graph.
What if I click on this? I get that. I'd still get this thing. And what are we looking for here? I mean, I'm confused.
Personally, I just saw that Doxygen could create a lot of different graphs, and so I just ran it, and that this is what I sent. But I could look into the options, the configuration file, and see if I could get it to create certain graphs.
I think what we need is a control flow graph.
Control flow?
Control flow, yeah. So for each of these tests, if I can get a control flow, which means that as the test executes, what functions get invoked?
So function.
So yeah, it's a control. It's called a control flow graph.
Okay.
And okay, so let's say I hit main, and then what happens? I don't get any control flow graph. So
for this to work, just to be effective, you have to write comments in your code in a specific format, because the goal of Doxygen is to, from the code, generate documentation. But it does have some requirements. You have to write comments in a specific format, And based on that, we generate a mutation protein.
Yeah, but I don't think for a function dependency, it would need that either.
No.
I'm looking at, I want to see control flow here. Is this a control flow? No.
Yeah.
It's not, this is just function documentation. It tells me the type of the function.
Right yeah.
How do I get control flow? Do I get control flow at all?
No, I'm starting to think that maybe I'd have to specify it to generate a function dependency control flow graph.
Okay, so I have three options. Data structures. So if I click on data structure, it tells me, okay, which data structure is used. So the container uses slabdir and page allocator, and slabdir uses all of this stuff, right? So this is just a data structure dependency graph.
I think if you click on it, it will also tell you the details of the data structure.
Here?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Now, I think this is helpful. This will help you, for instance, to quickly understand how various data structures are designed, right? What they contain and so on. The other part is the control flow. This is like a static information. Control flow is what happens when a test is executing, what gets invoked and so on. That, I don't know if this tool can actually do. Can it do that?
I don't know. Don't you
actually need to execute something to get... What do you want me to do, Leo?
Can you click on page allocator?
Yeah.
Do we see the definition there somewhere? Oh, yeah. So, the page allocator ops, that one, can we click on that one? Then you need to click on the type. So there's an initial down, a log page, free page. So those are the functions that we need to provide. So that's the indirection layer. It has an initialization shutdown, a way to allocate pages, and so free pages,
mm-hmm.
and map pages.
So what you're saying is that if a region system binding for this library should instantiate all of these things.
Right.
Okay, that's good. It's nice to have it that way. Structure index. Okay, so control flow. And the reason the control flow is important is for you to understand what the tests do, what gets invoked.
I started making it myself using just
pen and paper.
Yeah, but then I tried to go in a UML UML graph creator to create a nice graph. But then I remembered Doxygen. And
yeah, this is nice.
I thought it'd come with it.
This is nice.
But I'm sure I can create it. I'd probably just have to specify it.
Yeah, it's possible that it can create it because it has to. Well, there is something which is, you know, it needs to be able to parse control and jumps and things like if then else while and all of that stuff so that it can create the control flow graph correctly. But it's possible that this can do it.
Is that the same as a call graph?
Call graph, yeah. Yeah. Call graph, exactly.
So okay. Can you get the call trace if you don't have a bug?
If you don't have what?
If you don't have a crash or a bug. If you have a crash somewhere in the code, you get the call trace from the...
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a bug, can you get that the call trace?
Your stack trace?
Yes.
If you run it in a debugger, you stop it, you can look at the stack. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you want to get the function control flow, then you have to run the
debugger a million times. No, but I think there are probably tools. I don't know if Deoxygen can do it, but there are probably tools that will create the control flow graph for you. I haven't used any, but I've seen it you know, being used for drawing nice pictures in many security papers. I don't know. I mean, I've seen like really complicated pictures drawn in papers, and I suspect that it's not being created manually. There must be a tool that does that. So, which is why I'm saying that the Colgraph tool should exist. But I don't know if Deoxygen can do it. Maybe it can, right? So it's worth investigating, since you already knee deep into this tool, to see what else you can get out of it. But let's take a step back and try to understand why, you know, why we are doing all of this stuff, right? So what in your mind motivates you to do this?
Well, after hearing the answer already, it's to generate the call flow to see what functions are calling what and understand exactly how it is being run every test.
Hmm. Right. And then what is the consequence of that? So I want to sort of like get to a point where we see how it's going to be useful in a paper.
Okay. Once I generate a call graph, ideally I would have a better understanding of the code and the project and the tests. And we would also have graphs, which those in themselves can be used for the paper. And from my understanding, perhaps help with whatever else needs. Although it seems it doesn't need too much more development. It's pretty clean, but anything else? I mean, we do have, there are two tests that are still failing. So I could, with understanding, try to get those tests to work.
Okay. And each of these tests are valuable because?
I'd have to look at the test. It's really
okay.
Which ones they were.
Okay, so maybe Leo can fill in the gaps for us.
The reason why they're failing is...
No. I mean, I don't think you're talking about why they're failing, but why are these tests important? Because that's what we... I mean, how do they contribute to something in the paper?
Can you tell me exactly which ones, if you look at the files?
I have to look to see. I don't know off the top of my head which tests are
failing. That's fine. Let's say that two of these are failing, right? But I'm more concerned about what is the purpose of these tests in helping us write the paper.
Well, those are not helping us to write the paper.
They need to help somehow. Otherwise, what have we been doing here? It's
indirectly, they do.
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about that.
It's basically to test the functionality. These are very simple tests that do some test something. There are a couple that are specifically for that are somewhat complicated. So I also write a test to make sure that it works the way I expect it to work before I actually start using it as part of something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the case of the test PPTR full restore. That's what is it? Yes, it's full restore.
Okay, so coming back to why these tests are useful for the paper. They are useful for the paper because
when we run real experiments, we want to have a stable library. We don't want to be debugging at that point. We want to have something that is reliable.
Okay, so these are tests that will help you create a more robust library that will eventually be used for running tests that we'll report results for in the paper.
Right. For instance, when we start using SQLite, I want to be somewhat confident that we're not going to be introducing as many bugs. If something crashes, most likely it's on my end, but I want to reduce that to a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to make everything as small as possible to isolate bugs and things like that.
Okay, then Daniel's... So how does Daniel's task fit into that picture? His task is to run these tests for... the workloads that these tests prescribe are controllable, right? So you can create a bigger tree or a bigger list and Can these tests do that? Would they be used for micro benchmarking?
No, no, no. They do very simple things. Just to give you an example, for instance, we have a tree light structure, right? That supports, I don't even know how many gigabytes. So what I do is that I change the branching factor of the tree to check for boundary cases. Like what happens when I have enough allocation that I have to create a second branch of the tree and things like that. So I change that and write a test for that to exercise that some boundary cases that otherwise I would never reach, or I would reach when I'm using very big workloads. But I don't want to wait until then to fix it. I want to catch it now.
I see. Okay. Okay.
They every test they do very simple things because they target. They have one single purpose.
So can we? Can this? Then I'm trying to make the most out of this. Can we discuss the findings from some of these tests in a correctness section, in a correctness validation section in the paper?
They all work now. So
no, I'm saying that if you were to write about these tests, right, and present some data related to these tests, maybe in the just a tabular form and yes no check mark stuff, right, in a correctness validation subsection of the paper, not a section but subsection in the evaluation, can we do that with these tests?
They would help. I think the typical way that is measured is code coverage.
Yeah.
So with those tests, we can say cover this percentage of this much percentage of the code, so we're confident that it works.
Right. Okay, so I think we should probably then, I mean, if since we are already doing this quite a lot in detail, we should probably make it more, what's the right word here, more principled, a more principled investigation that we can actually report on the
Sure.
I think that would make the paper stronger. And that could, like, have a uniqueness of a factor, introduce a uniqueness factor for the paper.
Use the measures of significant volume then? I'm only doing that because...
If we do it in a principled way, and if we... if we're doing it the right way, then we can, be justified in reporting it in the paper. This, for instance, the atomicity stuff. Right, so if we do this in a principled way, then we would include that piece as well in these tests.
And we have that one, the crash recovery. You can only test that in a simple way.
Okay, so maybe we are not ready for that yet.
Oh, no, not at all.
I just want to see if since we are going in this direction, how much mileage can we extract for this as to contribute value to the paper, right? I just want us to think about that. So I don't want us to be wasting time on stuff that in the end really doesn't matter for the paper. Okay, so it's something to think about. Maybe Daniel, you and Leo can talk about this a little bit more to see if it needs to be expanded. Maybe the expansion points are where you get to contribute more significantly. Okay. Alright, so next steps for you, Daniel, immediate next steps is to see about the control flow graph. And I don't want you to be spending, 2 weeks trying to get that. I don't think it's that critical.
I don't think it's needed either. Because to understand the code, if you look at the code from the IDE that we set up, it's very straightforward. You just have to click on the function and jump to the definition.
There's something there.
Skip, click, and everything, and it will take you all the way to whatever it goes.
You can use Cscope and something to use this code.
Right. Cscope does that.
Yeah.
We even set something that is a bit more user friendly. So, graphic interface, you click.
Works.
I guess I'll just look to see if the oxygen can do it really quick, and if not, I'll just use other means.
Sure.
Okay, so let's say that I think the control flow graph for you is not a goal. It's just a means to a goal. So you need to define what your goal is. And I think your goal would be to successfully run these tests and understand what they do. Right?
Right.
And the consequence of that should be, you should be able to say that all the, you know, here's the functionality of the library that's been tested, and here's the functionality that's not been tested by these words.
How about something simple? Like, you said there are a couple of tests that they break, right?
Yes.
Just try to fix those.
Yeah.
Find out why they're breaking. I know exactly why they're breaking. It's very simple. So I think it's a good test for you to verify your understanding of the code. Because the reason why they're breaking is it's trivial. You just have to understand what's going on with the fixing. It's very simple.
He has to make code changes for that, right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's
not like running the tests incorrectly that's breaking it.
No.
It's code changes.
Right.
Okay.
With that file that you have to delete before running some of the tests.
This how it has to do with that.
Okay. Just that?
Right, but I don't want to delete the file to avoid the crash. I want you to understand why is it crashing. That deleting that file is fixing the problem.
There are two that, because I'm not running the performance one, there are two that crash even after I've deleted that file.
No. Let's see why.
Okay. I'll look into it then.
Okay. So, Leo, you're going to help Daniel and point him in the right direction with that, right? And eventually get him to write those additional tests.
Okay.
Excellent. So tell us what you've been up to, what you're doing.
Right, so what I wanted to do was to run this experiment, the same ones on the old machine. I haven't done that yet. I just got distracted reading the SQLite code. I made some progress, but I'll make it in my latest to do that. Say by Wednesday, show some of the results. So I'll do that this week.
Wednesday is tomorrow. Did you say Wednesday or something else?
Yeah, right, tomorrow latest, Thursday.
Hmm.
Yeah, tomorrow, the day of tomorrow.
So, is it clear to you how that machine needs to be used
I used it before.
Oh, you have used it before, that same machine.
The very submission, yes.
Okay.
I need to find an email that I have somewhere with the credential. But that's it.
Hmm.
I'm assuming that they haven't deleted my account.
Well, in the worst case, I have credentials, and if yours doesn't work, you can tell me what to do and I can do it.
Okay. So I'll check today if I'm not credentialing, I'll let you know.
The right thing to do, though, I mean, this is not the long-term solution, it's only short-term. The right thing for you to do is to get your credentials.
I did that. When I was there, the group that I was working with, they didn't have an administrative privilege in that machine because it's part of a different group. So I had to send a request, and I think I could. I just don't know if they terminated that after my internship finished.
They could have, but eventually I think they requested access for you, and I don't know if they reset your credentials at that time.
Okay,
I think Yufeng would be able to help with that, with the credentials if required.
Okay.
Alright, good. So we'll meet again next week, same time. All right. See you guys. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.